there's so many different mechanisms that you can use, including having outside consultants, coaches, mentors, friends, family, like kind of give you that mirror. But here's a tipping point, Ben, and this is why it legitimately is worth $1 million, the question you just asked, because I've seen this value for this question. The person who actually receives that question and awareness, it's their choice to change. If they don't want to change, you're missing out.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
Welcome to another episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. It's Ben Baker. Welcome back, everybody. Thank you very much every single week for being an amazing audience. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for commenting on my social media. I love that you guys all come together. So thank you very much. This week will not disappoint again. I've got Raul Ochoa from Do Good Work on the show. And we are going to talk about why removing bottlenecks from your business won't solve your problems. Now, Raul, welcome to the show. We got to get into this. So let's start the conversation.
Let's dive in. So what is a bottleneck? So Ben, from your listeners, like, what do you think is a bottleneck in the business?
You know, 9 times out of 10, it's me. You know, I look at it. I fully admit it. You know, you get there and you put your hands where your hands don't belong. Right? You know, I've been teaching leaders for years. Listen, you hire good people, you train them, you believe in them, let them do what they believe, you know, what they're trained to do, get out of their way and let them do the magic that they do. But owners of companies, especially the small business owners, we tend to get our fingers in places we just don't belong. And a lot of the times we just mess things up rather than letting the water just flow naturally.
Yeah, and that's exactly really pinpointing it to the surface level problem, right? You're a business owner and you're in every single project. You have multiple projects going at once and you kind of have your fingers in everything. And at some point you kind of do have to. But there's also some hidden attributes of becoming a bottleneck that a lot of business owners don't see, either in the way that they act and behave with their team, the setting that they create, the environment. Being micromanaging is just another way of labeling that, in addition to not trusting the team. So you could have the right people, you could have the right procedures in place, you could have those things, but if you don't have those three elements of trust with your team, making sure that you don't micromanage and have oversight, and three, having the right metrics to check the pulse. If you don't have those three things, then you will be a bottleneck in your business, as opposed to the current definitions that you're in everything and you got your finger on every single project, then you're just holding the projects up because, you know, you can't do everything. It's just human nature.
And we're going to get into all of that. But before we do, tell the audience a little bit about yourself, because you have a really interesting background that has got you to where you are today, to enable you to talk intelligently about all these policies and procedures and how to get out of your own way. But give people some insights about where you came from, where you are today, so we can talk about where we're going.
Absolutely. I think it's important to note that my experience isn't just from running companies, growing companies, or even like owning an own company. It's also coming from working with the small entrepreneurs, mom and pop shops, to the multi-million dollar brands, as well as my experience in corporate America and my education. So I used to work with JP Morgan. I grew up there pretty much going through school, but also my education was in entrepreneurship, where everything else in school was easy, like classes were nothing. This one piece of my education was, you got to start a business every semester. You got to start failing as fast as you can. I was in incubators. I learned how to learn paddleboard with the co-founder of Volcom. I learned how to think business strategy with the attorney that was fighting the case for Nest before Google bought them out. So it's pretty interesting to get that level of exposure early on and then also see trends and themes pop up as I work through my own company, as well as with clients and their companies. So it's kind of a unique mix to be able to have that dynamic. And it's just something that mentors and friends have been able to help me identify of like how I can truly help entrepreneurs.
So tell me, what's the one thing you learned growing up that enables you to be who you are today?
It takes me back. I mean, there's a lot, but one key thing was my mom telling me growing up while I was doing my bed, mind you.
Make your bed. Everything. Tell the kids, make your bed.
Yeah. She told me that the lazy person does things twice.
I love it. You know, doing things twice. You know, we always have time for rush. We always have time to rush through things, but we never make the time to do it right, because if we don't do it right, we have to do it over again. And it's amazing how many people don't have the money, don't have the time, don't have whatever it takes to do it right the first time, but they always have the time and they always have the money to redo things when it's a panic.
Exactly. And it doesn't mean that it has to be perfect. It just means that you have to at least put all the effort that you currently have with your given resources and circumstances and being prudent about that decision. So I'm elaborating based on my learnings on that. But if you're going to do something, do it at your best. Do good work.
No, I agree. And so that's where do good work comes from. I'm wondering, is that where the philosophy came from, do good work? And if so, what does that mean to you? What does do good work mean to you?
I think the philosophy came from a number of different exposure and learning early on in my career, in my life, in my faith life. But it's all about whatever you're doing, do it to the best of your ability. Because at the end of the day, success doesn't mean that you're better than someone else. It's that you're better than who you were that morning. And if you're able to look at yourself in the mirror at night and say, you know, I actually gave it my all. I pushed and I did what I could when I could. And you can't BS yourself because you're the only person you really can't BS. Then you did good work. And it's doing that day in and day out. And it's about the actual struggle of going through that, because no one's going to applaud you when you wake up at 3 or 4 a.m. No one's going to applaud you for staying up till 2 a.m. finishing projects. No one's going to applaud you for that. But it's being able to have the discipline and focus and maintenance of that through time and over time. And only you know that. So it's kind of highlighting that struggle behind, you know, what people don't see.
I love that, because growing up, you know, I came from a father within the construction background and doing commercial renovations. And I grew up, you know, from the age of 12 or 13, if not younger, sweeping job sites, digging holes, getting cigarettes and coffee for the guys. And my dad's attitude was always whatever it takes. Do whatever it takes to make it right. And I learned that from a very early age. And I think that whatever it takes and do good work really are hand in hand. They're two sides of the same coin. And it enables us to realize that it's not our job to compare ourselves with multi-million and billion-dollar companies and do the things that they're doing, because we're not them and they're not us. We need to do good work at our level. We need to be able to wake up every morning and be proud of who we are and what we do and why we do it. You know, but we don't need to sit there and say, oh, well, Google does this, so I have to do the same thing. That's just not realistic.
Yeah, that's installing different frameworks that work for that type of company and assuming that it's working correctly. Sometimes we just assume because someone's ahead of us that they're doing the right things and we start mimicking that, when really I've seen behind the scenes, like, no, it's not the right thing. Don't mimic it. Redesign.
And you have billion-dollar companies that still aren't profitable. You have companies that are these unicorn companies that still haven't made profit, but on paper, they're worth $1 billion. And, you know, it's all speculation. So you sit there and go, oh my God, they're so successful. They must be rich. They just got a $1 billion valuation. Well, all that means is that people gave them a bunch of money, you know, to take part of their company away from them. And now they have more people that they're responsible to. It doesn't mean that they're profitable. Doesn't mean that they're happy. Doesn't mean that they're even successful. It just means that they're valued for one shape, reason, or another at $1 billion.
Yeah, if I could even the playing field just a little bit, because you just hit on the head. I talked to a gentleman who runs a software company here in San Diego. They're valued at unicorn $1 billion, but they are profitable. And he told me on one of our podcasts, he was like, Raul, everyone in this space, you think they know what they're doing? No one has a clue. They're just figuring it out. So if you are right now figuring it out and you're persisting and persevering and adapting and pivoting when necessary, taking data in, trust me, you are on the right path.
So let's take that figuring it out and equate that to the bottleneck. Because I think that that is a great segue there. Because you talked about three things. You talked about trust. You talked about metrics. And what was the third point that you talked about?
Trust, metrics, and the culture that you're building as a leader.
Absolutely, and culture. So, you know, and I think that they all go hand in glove, but let's talk about them as the triumvirate. Let's talk about how do we as a company realize that, you know, where we are is keeping us from being where we want to be. First of all, how do we recognize that as an individual, as a leader, without taking that, you know, that ego kick in the pants? And once you do realize that, understanding what are the first steps to moving beyond that bottleneck and moving yourself into a position where you're actually able to move to, from that, you know, from that $1 million to $2 million for that 2 million to five or five to 25 to 25 to 100, whatever it is, you know, that you look as an individual metric for success, you know, how do you move yourself from where you are to where you need to be?
So you asked probably, and this is no exaggeration, probably a tough and $1 million question. And I love tough and $1 million questions. So the first one was around having the awareness to understand that I'm not getting to where I want to be because of me. That is a very tough question. Once you get that through that level of awareness, then the steps to getting to where you want to be, that's where I like shine, because that's not difficult, but we can talk about that. The first question, that's, there's so many different mechanisms that you can use, including having outside consultants, coaches, mentors, friends, family, like kind of give you that mirror. But here's the tipping point, Ben, and this is why it legitimately is worth $1 million, the question you just asked, because I've seen this value for this question. The person who actually receives that question and awareness, it's their choice to change. If they don't want to change, you're missing out. I speak from experience here. So when you're looking at that first level of awareness, where is the leader in their pride, ego, whatever, but also where are they willing to go and who are they willing to become? And that takes a lot of place up in here in the noggin and all that your decision-making. Also, it's more than just introspection, but it's also introspection tied to reality, focused on future progress. And that's a lot of work that needs to be done with interpersonal communications, interpersonal like self-relationship, self-view, status, worth, et cetera. Again, that's why it's a very difficult question. But once you have the identity and understand that, hey, I need to become someone greater. I need to focus on growth. My team needs me to be this person. My community, my impact, the people that I'm serving, the customers, clients, if I'm willing to accept that and embrace it, because it is a level of responsibility. And as you know, Ben, a lot of people shy away from responsibility. When you embrace that, then you can start making the changes. And the changes don't have to be overly dramatic, is which what I really focus on. I focus on two things, simplicity and results. When you focus on simplicity, it doesn't mean that it's easy. It just means that it's more clear, it's clarity, it's easier to understand, to grasp, and you can actually take action on. So the first stage is to actually untangling, let's say, the bottleneck or whatever's happening over here to get to where you want to be, is redesigning towards where is that point that we want to be. Like, Ben, let's use this for an example. Like, let's say right now, let's have a case study. Do you have any good idea of a product that you want to be taking to the next level?
Sure. I mean, we could take the podcast host for hire program. And the podcast host for hire program, for my listeners that aren't aware of it, is we produce podcasts for large to enterprise level companies for internal communication only. We have a lockdown, you know, enterprise level security program. And what we do is we take it from soup to nuts, everything from strategy and design all the way through distribution, including being the on-air talent. But the challenge is with those type of situations is understanding the internal dynamics of the companies that you're working with. It's the bottleneck doesn't tend to be with me, because I can be flexible enough to understand where people's challenges are, but it's enabling me to understand how to navigate the internal politics within certain organizations to be able to build the brand champions to see this thing through fruition.
That's beautiful. And so you have really good clarity of where you want to go, what you want to do. So that's the first stage, is understanding what is it and asking the right questions to get that level of clarity. Because you're at that level of clarity, now it's to identify, let's call them the key players or the key assets. And we identify the champions, the internal communications, having a lockdown approach, really soup to nuts, like everything is processed out. It's taking those things and then redesigning it in a way to achieve your end outcome and creating a plan. And I talk about design because this is marrying both your creative and analytical mind together to create a solution. And it's more strategic based. Notice we're not talking about tactics just yet. We're talking about frameworks. So this is higher level 30,000 foot frameworks, but they're based on principles. And the reason I like to teach frameworks is because there's a lot of people that just teach you the tactics and strategies, but they keep you dependent on, well, what's the principle behind it so that I can create my own framework. Like, it's almost like a drug addict. Like, here's your new hit.
Here's your cocaine, but I'm not going to teach you, how to make your own cocaine. You
know? I know, it's a horrible example, but it really, that's what I've seen. But when you look at the framework, is how do we redesign based on these key assets, key players, and the outcome? Now, here's where you have to do like an idea discovery or even discovery session with the team or with the stakeholders at hand to kind of identify what is the next best plan of action and creating iterations off of that. Because now that you have your version one, you get feedback from those key players or from internal team members, create a V2, version two, then you go to market and test it. And you have feedback loops to help you along the way. And when you do that around iteration 3 to 5, you should be finding something that's quote unquote working. And that process that I just described kind of answers the other question. That's the process of figure it out. There's a wall that we have to jump. There's an obstacle. Like, I ran Tough Mudder obstacle courses. You have to jump over walls, under hoops and mud and like all that fun stuff. There's an obstacle course here. How are we going to go through it? And how are we going to get feedback if we are unable to go through it? And how are we going to prepare better or for the next time that we're going to go through this obstacle?
But all of that's important. But the first thing people need to understand is they need to be clear about what their goals are. From my understanding, and everything that that we talk about, everything that that other guests have talked about, is that not only do you need to understand where you are, you need to understand where you're going. And then be able to build that bridge and take it in bite-sized pieces. It's the conversation, how do you eat an elephant? Well, one bite at a time. If you're constantly saying, okay, I want to go from zero to $10 million, you're probably never going to get there. If you sit there and say, all right, my goal is to be a $10 million company with 30 employees that does this, 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 and you've got the tangible goals and things that the metrics along the way, getting back to your trust metrics and, and communication type things, is that it enables us to be able to look at benchmarks along the way. Am I right or am I not understanding what you're saying?
No, you're right. Because that now we're talking more boots to the ground, more firm and less abstract. When we're looking at growing, let's say, let's use an example from other experiences that I've helped companies grow, like triple and almost less than a year. So when you're looking to do that, you don't just start to the end outcome. You start, what's the next best step? Because there's an intersection, and this is something that I'm writing about. There's an intersection between your responsibility, the current things that you're exceptional at, and the market need. And when you find that intersection and you address that head on and do it better than everyone else is doing, you have market share or you have wallet share there. And when you start doing that better, they can identify, how can I expand the brand deck? Meaning, how can I expand with new products or services to better service these customers and increase profit margins, increase revenue, and also increase the team that we could build out? Like, a good case study was a San Diego-based company. I won't name the name, but they were in the sports action scene and they only had one product, and that one product was making them go bankrupt, even though they were probably world renowned. And the issue was that they didn't build additional products. They didn't build out the brand. They just focused on a product feature. They didn't build out lifestyle gear. They didn't build out different types of cameras. They didn't build out those things. Now, recently they did, so they're out of that hole. But for a long time, we were looking like, oh my gosh, are they going to go out of business? Because they're not diversifying their portfolio. They're not diversifying what their offerings are. So as you start, let's say you're doing podcasting, and right now, this is just, again, an arbitrary company. It's just for example, if you're doing podcasting and you have the identified who's the market, what's the need, what's your responsibility? And I am very heavy on responsibility, as well as what am I exceptional at? What can we do better than most of the competition? Address that need first, get results, and expand that slowly. And as you start building a new baseline, I like to call it a new baseline of growth, trajectory, new team members, you can start seeing the horizon from a different view. Like, I'm not sure if you like hiking, but when you go hiking in the beginning, you start at the bottom. And then maybe an hour, 2 hours later, you're like 3,000 feet or 5,000 feet up. And you see a different view of the valley.
The view is very different. The trees are much smaller. You have a lot clearer view of the horizon. And it's amazing the things that you can see at 5,000 feet that you can't see at sea level. Exactly.
Exactly. So when you start doing that, then you start saying, okay, now that I see the terrain from a different stance, the mountain's still there. What else do I need to do? How can I better prepare? Now that I've become stronger to get to this level, how can we reassemble? How can we readjust and align to that vision? What are the other things that we can service for these customers? Those are just some of the questions to look at. But again, this is going more around strategic level thinking, because when you're the bottleneck of your business, the first thing is to get out of the day-to-day and more in the driver's seat and be able to view everything from a holistic point of view. When you start looking from the holistic point of view, you can start seeing areas that, oh my gosh, that's a weakness that I didn't see in the past. Let's solve that.
Hi, everyone. Do you want to be your best customer's vendor of choice? Do you want to cement relationships with them, add real value, and gain insights that your competitors just can't get? Go to podcasthostforhire.com. That's podcasthostforhire.com. And let's work together to make you the value vendor of choice. Let's take a look at a real current problem. And this is the problem that I'm seeing in hundreds, if not thousands, if not millions of businesses today. Mm-hmm. And I agree that there's a bottleneck that's causing this, and it's understanding what the bottleneck is and then how do we resolve it. We've gone from being in a position where you had very successful businesses in 2019 that everybody worked side by side. They had very effective communication. They had policies and procedures that worked. They were humming.
Yeah.
And COVID came. And people got sent home with a lick and a prayer and a Band-Aid and a duct tape. Leaders were unprepared for this. Technology was unprepared for this. People were unprepared for this. Systems, processes, et cetera, were unprepared for this. How do we move forward? Because we've been in a situation where we've done stuff. Well, it's COVID. We'll just deal with it for now. Mm. We're at a stage where 14 months later, the Band-Aids have got to come off. The duct tape's got to come off. And we need to figure a way forward where not everybody is ever going to return back to the workforce.
Yeah.
How do we make sure that we're not creating bottlenecks and enabling a new set of policies and procedures to evolve that will allow us to thrive due to the new sense of what normal will become?
That's a very heavy question, and it's a real one that I've had to work through with clients. So I think I want to break this into two, because you identified two key areas. The first being communication and the second being personnel, right? Like making sure that we have the right team to execute the right things in the right order. But going back to the communication, I hit principles here. And what I like to call it is shortening the gap between information and action. When you set up the principles, if you're in person or you're going remote, and I'll give you a real example, when you're able to set the principles of shortening the gap between what information is and translating that into action and being able to do that at a quicker velocity or the velocity that's best for your company, your team's cadence, you have something valuable that transcends in-person versus remote work. I had a client, well, I still have a client, and they're still in person, but they have an office, but now some of their staff are going remote. And they're like, oh my gosh, how do we transition to this remote department that is going to be led by this leader? How are we going to have that communications? How are we going to make sure that they're doing things right? How do we make sure? Because we set things up in a way where all of the communication, meaning threads, emails, Slacks, like we've been able to translate that into one centralized port of communication where all the team has access to, as well as leadership has direct access to private communications, sales has access to private communications, directors and even managers have their own private lines of communications. When you centralize that, that's just one part of the third. The second is having information that either you can use today or you can store and use in the future. When you centralize that and have the right access to the right people, then you're never saying, hey, Ben, knocking on your door, knock, knock, knock. Can I get this PDF worksheet or can I get this logins because I need to go do this X, Y, and Z? And they're like, oh, let me go and find it for you. And then you spend 2 hours trying to find it. And like when you have already in the get-go a system in place, this is what a system is. Like it's not technology, it's just a framework in place to have those two things. Now, the last piece is action and making sure that you're tracking the key company initiatives, knowing who's doing it, how it's being done, and know that it's being done correctly because the information that you provided is, hey, this is how we do things around here. And this is the level of excellence that we expect. When you have those three things married together, you can use different, again, I don't care about the tools you use. You can use different softwares. You can't use Pigeon Mail. So I was about to say that, but you can use different software, whatever your team is comfortable with. And this is, again, adapting to what your team works best in. But if you follow that principle and framework, you're able to create cohesiveness between departments, between teams, as well as get things done faster. And I care about speed. I mean, I'm an entrepreneur. Speed is like my second language. Get things done faster, but get things done right. And that's one of the most important pieces to have. And that's a huge hurdle because I mean, with small teams, maybe 15, 20, okay, it's not that hard. Larger teams, when you got like, I don't know, 50, 100, all the way up to 200 people, now that's a bigger beast to move. And I've noticed the setup time to get things rolling in that direction, because it's what I'm helping teams do right now. It's a little bit slower and it's a little bit harder, but it's the same principle. It's just adapted to a wider scope and making sure that there's buy-in from every key stakeholder and team member to implement that. So that's, I think, the first piece that you asked around. How do we make sure that communication is, how do we make sure that our team is still there? Because I think the real question is, how am I going to make sure that I still have a team? It's a human question, because a computer screen is not a team in my room by myself. How do I make sure I still have that? And there's different elements that you can include, but that's one of the key frameworks to executing your work.
And it's interesting that you use the word team, because there's a big thing going out. Are we a team or are we a family? And I'm a big thing right now. There's a trying to remember who the author was, and I'll try to put it in the show notes. But there was a big thing is we're not a family as a company. We're a team. You know, families are dysfunctional. Family tries to get away with stuff they can. Your family has different sets of rules. But a team, we're all sitting there looking at saying, what is the objectives that we're trying to move towards? And how do we create effective policies and processes in order to make sure that we achieve our objectives? Where families, the objectives can get muddy with personal relationships, et cetera. And that runs into different things with trust issues. So I wanted to diverge and talk about, get back into trust, because trust and bottlenecks seem to be a big issue. You know, it's to sit there and say, how do you get people beyond the fact where they think because they're out of sight, out of mind, or out of sight, I don't trust them, mm-hmm. to the point that says they may not be, you know, working from 8 to 5 anymore. They may be working from 3 to midnight. They might be working from 6 a.m. till 11 o'clock in the morning, taking a break to 1 and then working, you know, to 6 and then on 8 to 11, you know, depending on what their particular schedule is and working remotely. How do we get leadership to understand, trust the people, and be able to build in the flexibility to allow people to just accomplish tasks instead of be there for X number of hours on a daily, weekly basis? Because we're not in that stage of reality anymore where it's time-based work. It's all about outcomes.
Yeah, and that's a beautiful question, because even when I hired even teams that I've helped grow in 12 plus different times, I stopped counting at 12 different time zones. But it's like, hey, I don't care if it takes you 20 hours to do this or 2. As long as the results are there, you're happy and we're happy, we're good. That's a first stage. So to answer your question, there's like 2 real ways that I found. One is better than the other, but also it depends on the person that we're working with. So let's first define the statement, I don't trust you. Leaders are not going to say that. They're not going to say to your team, I want a group huddle here and I want to look everyone in you in the eye and say, tell you, I don't trust you. They don't say that. They say it by their actions. How? I'm going to need a report every single day knowing exactly what you did today. I'm going to need you to log your hours exactly, and anything over like the 40 hour mark, I'm just going to need to get a report exactly what that was. I'm going to need you to set up these meetings, and I need you to attend these meetings and tell me what you're working on. Those are some ways. They might sound like an exaggeration. Those are some ways that I've
seen keystroke logging, you know, for companies.
Yeah, keystroke logging, or even saying, hey, I'm recording you right now and your heat map and everything that you're looking at. And this is my computer. It's my technology. It's my ownership. These are from real companies. I'm not making this up. And this is from real leaders. And okay, that's fine. I understand that you want to have control. There's 2 ways of really doing this. And one is more rudimentary. And this might sound a little bit, well, a little harsh. The other way is a little bit more tactical and a bit more softer, let's put it that way. The first way is, okay, if the leader's adamant and does not want to change and you've tried to come to their senses, you got to let them fail a little bit, but not fail so hard where they fall on their face and it hurts other people. And that's really tough love, to be honest with you, because they're not going to learn. It's like, oh, wow, this is actually not going where we want it to be going. How long will that take to get results? Might take 3-6 months. Is that ideal? No, but is it ideal to change behavior? Perhaps, depends on the personality. The best way of doing this, and this is a longer conversation, is to work with that leader and navigate the conversation where they believe that they're coming out with the outcome themselves through using some of Chris Voss, some of the emotional tactical empathy, moving emotions, and then using rationale, and then using actual outcomes, and finding a solid ground where we can have, cool, if they do these things, you don't have to worry, but I'll give you these metrics and reports every week done by the outcome of their work, and you'll be able to see that and measure. Now, the leader who is, this is just the micromanagement that we're defining.
Sure, absolutely.
Who is like that might like those reports and be able to have certainty, because what they want is they want to feel like they're in control. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. I mean, usually for entrepreneurs and business owners, like, you gave life to this company. Like, I get that. That level of ownership, high respect. Just know that that level of control isn't going to help not only you, but your team. Because your team, if you're just treating them like a hired work of hands, you're missing out on the hidden talents that they could bring to the table and help them shine and help them grow. And I think every single company right now can do a little bit more in the human department and being able to almost like, by the way of changing your thinking and the changing your attitude and the culture, you can enhance productivity. I don't know what level of percentage, but I can guarantee you it's going to go up by doing a different approach that enables them and empowers your team to do their work better at their best. And it's significantly different from them doing the work, what you think needs to happen, how you need to happen, then you're now a bottleneck again, because you hired someone who's supposed to be smarter than you to execute that work.
Well, and Tia, from a dollar and cents point of view, as you as a bottleneck, if you're spending all these time reading these keystroke reports, you know, these management reports of all these things, and you're focused totally on these reports and micromanaging and all the metrics that go through it, you're spending hours and hours and hours of time each week just micromanaging, rather than spending the time with your customers, rather than coming up with the next big idea, rather than enabling the company to grow. So you are that bottleneck, because you're so focused on micromanaging, you're so focused on not trusting these people and allowing them to do that, all you're doing is putting yourself in a position where you're using your high value time doing low value work. And I think that that really comes down to the crux of the matter.
Exactly. And even going as far as maybe they're not even checking and they have another assistant or some technology checking, but at the end of the day, that extra redundant work that your team has to do, number that in dollars and cents.
Busy work that's just redundant.
And that takes it away from their activities. And those activities could either be supporting customers or getting new customers, which are the most important activities in companies.
No, I love it. I mean, this has been fascinating. This has been an absolutely fascinating conversation. And we'll make sure that, you know, everybody knows how to get in touch with you. We'll make sure that everybody has all the links to you. But I have one question I ask everybody as I let them out the door. And this is it. As you leave a meeting, as you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
Have fun and just do your best.
You know what? That is probably one of the most insightful answers I've got. I've got 270 plus answers at this. I have never had somebody say, have fun.
Yeah, you have to enjoy the journey.
Absolutely. Enabling your customers to have fun, because people in business take themselves way too seriously. And we all need to sit there and go, you know what, guys? For the most of us, it is amazing how we live our lives. And we don't enjoy what we do. And I think that that's so critical.
It's important for you, your team, your customers. Just design the journey, do it your best, but also enjoy it. If not, it's going to be labor. That's not fun. And I don't want you to live that kind of life.
Raul, thank you for an amazing conversation. Thanks for being such an amazing guest. I learned a lot. I'm sure my audience did as well. And I can't wait for you to continue conversations offline.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
This has been the YourLivingBrand.live show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at YourLivingBrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?